Welcome to These Three Remain, stories of faith, hope and love from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. I'm Rick Hill, the host of this podcast, and it's great to bring you another conversation today reflecting on our life and witness. We'd love you to take time to subscribe to the podcast so that you receive future episodes, and we are also inviting you to interact with us by sharing your own stories of faith, hope and love from your own congregation. Paul Brown, youth worker in Knock Presbyterian, has done just that. He writes this: "We've been running socially distant games with young people in the church grounds since the end of June. This has been providing vital connections for young people, respite for families and opportunities to hear the gospel, to be reminded that God is in control. It has been great to see young people laugh, play and on the grounds of the church they have been absent for 15 weeks. And that follows on really nicely from our last episode, Exploring Youth Ministry. And also, maybe on a similar thread, Reverend Colin McGaw also got in touch to highlight some of his work through prison chaplaincy. And he says, as a pastoral team, we are attempting to engage in evangelism on site at Woodlands Juvenile Justice Centre in Bangor. We have developed a course called Restore. It's about real evidence, secret treasure and offered relationships. This is currently running at JJC during July and August with smaller groups due to distancing requirements. We really appeal for prayerful backing that the residents may be blessed, encouraged and drawn to saving faith." And Warren Smith finally writes, "At Ballydown Presbyterian in Banbridge, we have really missed the opportunity to congregate together for the past few months. However, as restrictions eased, we have been blessed to facilitate a fortnightly drive-in church service in the field adjacent to the church. This has been a real encouragement to church members and also to many visitors to be able to lift praises together with the worship team, hear testimonies and have God's word presented. The buildings may have been closed, but the church has been very much alive and thriving during these uncertain days." So it's great to hear of all those initiatives, and they certainly do give us encouragement and hope as we continue to ease into this next phase. So now on to today's episode, and we're going to have a conversation about the whole area of mental health. We know that this won't be the last or definitive word on this issue, but we think it's an important one to explore, particularly perhaps in the current climate. And so hopefully today's discussion will help to inform and stimulate your thinking in this area. And I'm joined by three people who all have a really helpful perspective to bring. So a big welcome to Susan Williams, Dr. Tim Huey and Reverend Peter Lyle. Thanks for joining us, folks. So why don't we just kick off maybe by telling us who you are, maybe what you do, even what congregation you're part of. Susan, maybe you could kick off.
I am a trauma counselor, so I am at the sharp end of mental health needs, really, but also I'm an elder at Hamilton Road Presbyterian Church, and so in the session I'm also part of the COVID strategy group and also convener of our pastoral care committee. So I have multiple concerns about this. I'm also very interested in small groups and have been for years. So that's a very keen interest of mine.
Tim?
I'm Tim, married to Alison, three teenagers and an 11-year-old at home as well. I work 3.5 days as a GP, and part of my week I'm involved in biblical counselling. So I offer some counselling through my home church, White Abbey Presbyterian. And like Susan, I serve as an elder there as well. And I'm involved in the pastoral care ministry group. And I also have an interest in small group ministry too. So perhaps we'll get a chance to touch on that.
I love all these different hats that you're all wearing. So, Peter, what about you? Tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm Peter Lyle. I'm minister in Ballyhome Presbyterian. I've been here for about just approaching 18 years. Married to Heather and two daughters, Kim and Zoe, and they proved part of the answer to, well, not the answer, but help in my journey. I am not at the delivery end of mental health. I'm at the other end of mental health. I've had struggles with it over the years, particularly 2008 to 2009. When I was off work for a full calendar year and went on quite a journey, but an amazing journey that has brought great blessing. And two of the greatest blessings are our two girls who we adopted from Thailand.
And Peter, you wrote about this earlier this year, isn't that right? There was certainly something in the Presbyterian Herald. What was the response to that, even as you shared some of your story more publicly?
some response came to me personally. A few people emailed, texted, sent a card, just thanking me so much for going public, I suppose would be the term, on the issue. There seems to have been a lot of other response that never made it to me, but people did say to me, quite a few folk have said to me, they saw your article in the Herald, or they saw the interview in the Belfast Telegraph. Really, once I came through what I came through 10 years ago, I decided it was vital that I be transparent about this, and that I don't shy it away, I don't hide it away, but particularly in my role as a minister, that I'm open and honest about it. And so whilst it's not something I talk about, you know, every single illustration or sermon point that I make, if the opportunity arises, I do that. And I've seen in our own congregation a number of people, and you know, they would be people who, if others knew, they would be utterly stunned that they are the people who are struggling with mental health, and because they would appear to be very successful, hands in control of everything kind of people, and yet really behind the scenes they were really struggling. So I took the opportunity to share, and when I can, when it's appropriate, about it.
Has it been able to, you know, in terms of your experience, has been a personal journey, but also what's been your experience as a pastor, I guess, or as you've been pastoring people in the last 10 years since that? Has that been, you know, given you a whole new window or insight into that too?
Yes, it has. I think it, maybe more than anything, it's helped to be a point of connection. It has helped people to open up more, to feel comfortable to share more. And maybe even as I've referred a bit to my own experiences, that's peeled some more layers back, because they then identify with what we're talking about. And it's been part of an overall work of trying to encourage people to be themselves in church. And I suppose that this is a great time when people are being encouraged to put on masks. I'm not really enjoying that thing. You know, we wore ours for the first time the other day, and our older girl said, I don't like it, I can't breathe. And so we're encouraging people, you know, instead of putting the mask on, you know, when you have it on, you really want to take it off. Well, let's do that. Let's actually take our masks off and open up and who we really are. Of course, one of those areas would be mental health.
Thanks for sharing in that way. Susan, I don't know what hat you want to put on to answer this question, but maybe just what is your take on this whole area right now, maybe particularly as we begin to emerge from lockdown or pandemic? Many people have said that this will be an increase. There will be an increase in mental health issues in the month ahead. Where do you see this whole area and an issue right now?
Oh, it's a massive area. But I don't think it's any different from what we've seen in our culture over the last years, as many institutions crumble, like marriage and family. I think we are a culture that are going to be spawning more and more mental health issues. Like with our teenagers, the number of mental health issues now is astronomical. So I think it's something that the church has really, really had to take seriously, but now it's being forced to take it seriously. So I think it's none too soon. And I really appreciated what Peter was saying, because about 30 years ago, I had a major trauma in my life. So it's something that we all can bring our own personal knowledge, which we do all the time. But it makes us humble as well, which I think is a really crucial thing for our churches. So I'm thrilled to hear what Peter is talking about in Ballyhome. And I have heard good things about Ballyhome in that respect. But I think having a safe place for our people to actually admit need is going to be a massive struggle. I think we can't just expect that to happen. So there are lots of concerns. I think the isolation that people have suffered during this time has been a major factor, but I don't think the church has always been very good at helping people feel comfortable to say, I need to talk to somebody. I need to be with a group that can just be with me. So I think having that kind of sensitivity actually discipled into people, that it becomes part of our discipleship, is really, really an important thing. It's both an opportunity and a massive responsibility for the church.
Yeah, I'd love to dig that into that wee phrase, it's part of our discipleship. Can you unpack that a little bit for us, or share a little bit more on that?
This is a big topic, so I'm afraid I could talk too long on this.
I've opened a can of worms here.
It's a wonderful can of worms, but I think too often our discipleship has been a head discipleship, and we haven't really looked at the problem of, well, yes, we know we want to love God more and love our neighbors more, but how do we practice that with each other? How do we encourage each other so that we blossom as disciples, really? I've been part of a group over the last couple of years where we were just trying to explore the material that was coming out of the Emotionally Healthy Spirituality course, yes, by Pete Scazzaro. And we moved through that. And then this year we met for 8 sessions and did the Emotionally Healthy Relationships course by Scazzaro. And it's just a foundation. It's not a miracle worker, but it became the foundation for a group that actually had a language and an understanding of some of the issues of what makes us unsafe with each other. So we could recognize those things, talk about them, realize them in ourselves, and create a context where we're actually growing in those ways and have the courage to talk about some of the harder aspects of our lives, of our experiences in our lives that are humbling us at the moment. And it's turned into an exploration of group spiritual direction. So it's actually, it's growing all the time. And I think one of the aspects of that that's really important is that we have a context where people can say if it's not working for them. And I think when the church isn't working, we need to have a context where we want to hear when it's not working. So we're not going to take things personally. We're going to actually take it on board and constantly learn, how do we meet each other's needs in a better way? And I mean spiritual needs as well as emotional and even intellectual. We deal with those things as well if we have questions.
Okay. No, that's great. I appreciate that. And Tim, from a GP point of view, can you give us maybe your take or your experience on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no denying that there has been, and there's going to continue to be, an increase in mental illness presenting to medical services. And we see that through helplines such as Lifeline or Samaritans, and the demand on various counselling organisations. And I suppose, you can recognise that a lot of that has come because this pandemic has kind of just disrupted so much of the kind of normal routine and patterns of living that give people a sense of security. And I think people who've maybe lived with a kind of lower level of mental health struggle, that has kind of been exposed through this experience, and a lot of those symptoms have been accelerated. Plus, I think, you've people now experiencing a sort of intensification of life. They've been cocooned with family members, which for us in a home with 4 kids at times has felt very intense and challenging. But also on the flip side of that have been people who've experienced real intense loneliness through this time. So there are certainly many reasons why, medically, I think that there has been a surge in mental health issues. I suppose, picking up on what's already been said, the reality then is that the church should be seeing and identifying and recognizing this rise in mental health issues as well. And if we aren't seeing that in our own congregations, then we probably need to ask ourselves, why are we not seeing that? Are we sending out a message that we don't have permission to take off these masks? You know, are we seeing weakness or struggle as a lack of faith? Which, you know, I think if we read the Psalms, we could see an argument that it's actually the opposite. But maybe this sense that there is something to be ashamed of, and I think the experience of mental illness, as Susan and Peter probably both indicated, there is a humility that comes from that. And in my own life, through, you know, one of our children having quite severe learning disability and additional needs, for her first few years of life, there was a pride in me that opposite of humility that wanted to be the person who was self-sufficient, who didn't need people to reach out and help. And thankfully, the Lord revealed that pride and showed me the better way of humility, that place of brokenness and dependence on others, that actually just became such a rich source of blessing and the antidote to the anxiety that the pride was feeding in me for those first few years. So
maybe, I mean, it's really important, and we're keen in this conversation to consider what the church can be doing to step into this issue more. But I'm wondering, maybe before we get there, if you could each maybe share some things that each of us could be doing at this time, maybe either proactively or perhaps reactively, to look after our own mental well-being at this time. Peter, could we start with you on that?
I mean, I do think some of the routine advice that's given, taking regular exercise, getting proper rest, eating well, all those kinds of things are all essential. I have found, we're members in Castle Espe, and I just love going over there. The girls all run wild around the place. Not my wife, but the two girls run wild around the place. But there's a sense of being able to walk and just, and I'm not normally like this, but just breathe deeply and just absorb the silence and the peace of it. The other thing, throw a hand grenade, is I would avoid social media like a plague, because, and I'm on social media, but you know, even if you take the past number of months during the lockdown, you know, you have people posting about, you know, oh, they've their children covered all these topics today as they, you know, self-school them, and really they're ready to be awarded their doctorate, and they've managed to paint the house, mow the grass, cut their hair, you know, all kinds of things, and you're sitting going, I have no idea how the teachers have worked out the maths to do it this way, and it just feels that it feeds that feeling of, you know, maybe you're not all you're cracked up to be, and those kinds of things. For me, it's what I call triggers. They're the things, you know, that you need to watch for or else engage. And so that would be my sort of sixpence worth there. Mm-hmm.
It's the amazing thing about that is that we hear of, actually, Peter, you doing devotionals every day. So a lot of people are impressed by all you're doing.
It was good fun. It was I enjoyed it. It was a lot of work, but I did gain a lot from it, which I may refer to later on.
Susan, have you thoughts on this, how we can maybe proactively or reactively be looking after our own mental well-being?
Yes, I think what Peter said is good. I'm a bird lover myself, and I think and flowers, you know, taking that quiet time to even deadhead flowers. I think sometimes we're like babes who, you know, or puppies who are grouping for the teat, and we can't connect with God in a way that is profoundly rich for us in the moment. And I think learning to do that so that our connection and our quiet time, our meditation and our quiet time, is really deeply nourishing. I think that's something we can learn better. We can focus better during those times. And that sounds like work. I guess when you do it, and if you do it with people, it can be a kind of practice that means you get that food when you really need it, because you are going to need it, especially in my counseling work with major trauma. I think that, I would say, is my number one go-to.
Susan, you're right. Lockdown has given us space and time, which I think I've really valued, and it's in some ways it's felt like a gift to have that time to carve out and spend with the Lord. And yeah, I mean, as a GP, I'm definitely an advocate for physical health. We're embodied souls. We can't disconnect the physical from the spiritual. So, I'm certainly, I enjoy running. That's my kind of getaway. That's my equivalent of Castle Espy. And yeah, that's something which I think is healthy and good. I think the other area that I would throw in is sort of the idea of cultivating good relationships with those who are close to us, your family, friends, people in a workplace, people in church life. It's recognized we were made to thrive in relationship. Yes, these relationships have been impacted by the fall and just the sin that's in the world, but I think sort of in the areas of work that I do, I see many mental health problems emerging from broken relationships, you know, through conflict, through comparison, comparing, as Peter says, the damage that social media can do as we compare ourselves with others, you know, holding on to bitterness and anger. And I think that can really fuel a lot of mental health issues. So a focus for me would be kind of nurturing, you know, good relationships, and actually the responsibility that we in church have to teach what God's kingdom looks like as we live with each other and as we extend love and grace to meet anger and not having to have the last word, and good ways of living and relating to others that actually will benefit our mental health massively.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's press into that in terms of the role of the churches in all this. You mentioned that earlier, Tim, is something that's really important. How do you think we can be offering hope in this area or respond helpfully to those within our congregations, maybe whose mental health has been negatively impacted?
It is such an opportunity, I think, for churches to engage. And as we said, I think now more than ever, churches are standing up and recognizing the need that there is to offer help. You look at a lot of the emotions that people experience in mental illness, you know, fear, anxiety, that need for something to trust, where there's despair, the need for hope, where there's shame, that need for acceptance. You know, there's so much that resonates with, you know, with what we believe. I think that the church needs to go looking for these people. We want to actively pursue folk and really know them. I think, you know, during lockdown, I didn't miss the meetings, didn't miss the committee meetings or the session meetings. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that,
you know,
on a PC.
You know, podcast. This has been recorded, right? Oh. You know that.
Okay, so I may never be at another meeting again. I don't know. I think what I missed, you know, were the people. What I valued has been the times when we could still meet one-to-one or in small groups. So sort of continuing that relationship focus that I talked about, I think the church needs to recognize the significant value of small group ministry now, which for many will be the only place where they're going to feel safe to meet together. As scripture teaches that the priesthood of all believers, then now's the opportunity to really explore what that might look like for our own church context. I think there's something to tap into there as we seek to support people with mental illness.
And Susan, you mentioned earlier that was a kind of key area for your life too.
Those things are so close to my heart. One of the things I've really struggled with over the years, I've been in a prayer triplet for about 24 years now. And I've been an advocate of prayer triplets, but when I've tried to advocate those in the church context, I've realized there was a serious problem in that people weren't always equipped to be in a prayer triplet in a fully life-giving way. And so they've often, some lasted, but most of them would die away after time. And I think they ran into glitches relationally that they weren't equipped to actually deal with. And so this whole business of discipling in relationships and actually the nuts and bolts of how we be truth, you know, speak the truth in love, how we contend with issues like negative relational patterns that can seep into our church. All of us, our family of origin, had some form of negative relational patterns. And so I think we need to take on, it is a scary thing for the church to take on, but it is wonderfully rewarding to begin to train these things into people so that obviously we have a lot of people with needs, but for the church, we need an increasing number of people who can give a life-giving and spiritually healing response to those needs. So we need groups that actually are creating our Barnabas people. And learning how to do that, I think that's something that we need to tackle really intentionally, and I think it's going to take some work.
And I wonder, Susan, how we break down some of those barriers and allow more honest conversation where people can talk more openly about their struggles. I'm sure you've thought quite a bit about that.
Well, I have, because I do think that we do things that actually automatically make it difficult. So the whole issue of how we use power in the church, I think, really needs to be addressed. I did doctoral research on trauma and language. And one of the things that was apparent in the analysis of the language was that our language is embedded with power moves. And it can seep into the way we communicate and relate to each other in the church. And if we have these subtle power maneuvers in our language, they actually really discourage the broken and the wounded from coming out because they feel they could be hurt or made to feel more powerless than they already feel. And that's why, like, what Peter's doing in terms of coming out is both brave, but also it is important. But I also know that some people who come out get such poor treatment that they go back into their shells again very quickly. So yes, I think Bible studies that focus on relationships in the Bible are actually quite interesting. But we can do the two things simultaneously, but we need to work at it intentionally and create a place where criticism, like if I do say something that makes you feel more afraid of me, I pray that you will tell me and you will trust me not to get defensive or irritable with you if you do that with me, because I need you to help me grow.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember when I had completed the article for the Herald, sitting with my finger hovering over the send button for quite some time, because I thought, I'll just say it. I mean, it probably sounds dramatic and stuff like that, but it almost felt like the moment I send this is, if we put it just in terms of career prospects or something like that, now I believe in higher than that, mm-hmm. but it's strange the thoughts that cross your mind at moments like this. I thought this could be me and my career finished. I'll do nothing else. No one will ask me to participate in anything else. Alan, who's recording, he will remember being involved in a committee that I was in Church House many years ago, and I would have been involved in quite a bit. And more recently, and a lot of my colleagues would say, I wouldn't say a word about this, but keep it the way it is, because you're in a very good place. I'm involved in nothing in Church House. I haven't been asked to participate in anything. And there is a parallel to 2008-2009, that's when it seemed to dry up a bit. Now, it could be just I fell off the radar or something like that. Or it could be the impression that was built up for years afterwards. I would have had people coming up and saying to me, "And how are you?" And it was just the way it was said. And I was very much, "I'm fine. I'm really fine." I actually decided, let's face these things up and let's deal with them rather than pretending that they don't there. So I had a couple of experiences of ministry being done to me where someone agreed with everything that I said because the same happened to them, but they got on with it. And another one where I was told I had to do something since I really wasn't ill. And
yeah,
is it any surprise if that's the way those involved in ministry of various kinds? I'm not pointing at the ministers in particular, but those involved in ministries of various kinds. If that's how they react when they are confronted with someone, because you got the impression that I must sound like I'm just somebody whining on and about how unfair life is, and catch a grip of yourself and, you know, man up and get on with things. And it wasn't like that. That was not the way I was feeling inside. Yet I appreciated when I heard myself, and sometimes I was able to hear myself, I appreciate that's maybe how it sounded. So in terms of trying to help people, I think there has to be transparency. People have to be themselves. And if they're struggling with something, there needs to be, I think it was Tim or Susan referred to, it has to be a safe place. Church has to be that. It has to be the loving family where people can be themselves and open, feel I can open up and say, you know, how are you? Instead of saying, I'm fine, to be able to go, well, do you know, at the minute, I feel rotten, and that the person doesn't respond in a way, go, oh, gee, I wish I hadn't said that, you know, because that is what happens on so many occasions. And when you get that reaction, the next time you're just going to go, I'm fine. Paper it over and let's just move the conversation on here.
I think what you're saying there, Peter, highlights that, you know, many in church feel out of their depth, I think, at times when talking to people who've experienced mental illness, and you know, without excusing some of those responses that you had, which, you know, were very difficult for you. But I think some people at times feel nervous, and they almost want to say something and close down the conversation and move on. And I think that the challenge for us is to see how we can begin to equip believers, and recognizing, you know, that we have this role to shepherd and to care well for each other, that this isn't something we leave to the ministry team or the professionals, as it were. So it's that challenge of giving people the tools to care well, and I think, as was kind of hinted at, to actually begin to see how that can be embedded in discipleship within church, that we develop a kind of a pastoral theology that sees how God equips us and changes us through those very illnesses that we want to hide from our brothers and sisters in Christ, and yet are the very tools that the Lord has used to bring change and transformation in our lives. So,
and I mean, I also think, you know, I believe that there are probably a fair number of people spread throughout the church who are struggling with their mental health, but actually the potential that is there for because there's nothing like being able to minister to someone through something you've gone through. And so, for example, obviously one of the most regular things I would do would be bereavement and grief. My dad died on the 3rd of April, and I've spent all the time since thinking about how I need to redo everything, because the experience of going through it myself was totally different to what I assumed. And so we've all, you know, there's lots of people throughout the church, and if we can, and that's the challenge, if we can really help them, if we can help them live with or move through whatever, they can become, and that's what I've tried to say, the weakness can become an incredible strength. Mm-hmm. That can really be used to help people. I've seen people's eyes brighten where they've sat, tear-filled eyes, looking at the floor, talking to me. And the moment I've said, and the people say this to you, and just the eyes brighten and they look up at you, yes. And then it opens up suddenly the mask is completely gone from both sides, and you can really start into heart-to-heart discipleship connections.
Yeah, it's 2 Corinthians 12 stuff, isn't it? You know, where yep, we're weak, absolutely. We're strong. I mean, if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, actually, I do want my church to be a safe space, or I do want to develop a theology of mental health or lift the stigma, how have you thought practically on actually how could they do that?
I would go back to my emotionally healthy spirituality and say, start there. It's a Bible study. It is, it's not too intense for people who are just beginners. And so it's only a start. It's only 8 sessions. But it gives you a starting place to think about our heart, our emotions in the context of our church life. And actually parallel to that is a little book called Meek and Lowly by Dane Ortlund on the heart of Jesus, and which is really a lot about the emotions of God, really, which is something we don't think about. But he refers to the Puritans quite a lot in that book. And so we can see that actually sometimes our theology is a bit dry, so that we don't feel comfortable with emotions, and certainly not thinking about God's emotions, when in fact, historically, the church has had this as part of its tradition and teaching. But we've lost some of this in our more current theologies. So I think there are a number of things like that can actually begin to shift the boat in a different direction, where these things become more comfortable for us to be talking about together. And certainly we can begin to talk about when we're safe and when we're not safe, which I think that conversation is crucial.
I think I would highlight some of the resources that are available through Biblical Counseling UK. That's sort of an organization that I train through, and I'm involved now as a tutor in the BCUK certificate course, which is really there to allow people to engage with some of this learning and take it back to their own congregations. BCUK have produced a lot of material which is very helpful. There's a study book called Real Change, which again, as Susan was saying, it helps people to get to the heart of a struggle or a challenge or a difficulty that they faced in life, and begin to join up the dots and begin to make the connections with faith, and where Christ and the gospel can meet them where they're at. Another quite practical measure that we have in church is we've just set up a little bookstall that has lots of kind of mini books on a whole kind of spectrum of mental health challenges. There's issues like breaking the addictive cycle, controlling anger, sexual assault, your special needs child, dealing with family feuds, just a whole kind of realm of issues. But I think as you put something up like that in church, and you encourage people to to take it. You're actually saying that we are a place that recognizes that these things go on, and that we're a place that actually wants to speak truth into those situations and offer help and love and support and transformation through that. So simple things like that can make a difference.
The other thing I would say, I've said it a number of times, is that we all ourselves are honest in church and show ourselves for who we really are. I just don't know if that's always the common experience. But the resources and the training are obviously very, very important.
We've been asking each contributor to share something from Scripture that has especially spoken to them in these days. I don't know if there's a particular passage that maybe you've sensed even speaks to this situation, or if it's something more general. But Peter, why don't we start with you?
During lockdown, as Susan said, I started doing these daily devotions, which meant it's not been a free time or relaxing time for me at all. But one of the things that I did was I took a verse from each book of the Bible each day. And okay. So it took me through the whole Bible. Going through the Old Testament was revolutionary for me over the past number of months. And it was simply that constant reference from God, compassionate, gracious, abounding in love, slow to anger, and how God worked with people, and it took time, and that he used all kinds of means and all kinds of people to bring his purposes forward, and to his longing for good in people's lives. And that, I suppose, looking back again, through a really dark and messy period, I can see God doing Old Testament stuff back there, working in ways that I couldn't see, using people that I was very surprised that I'm using, but to bring his good, his compassion, his love, his grace into my life. So that would be my experience.
Susan?
Well, similarly, but this is more the mind of Christ than the mind of God the Father in the New Testament. It's been on my mind a lot, the mind of Christ in Philippians 2, where Paul says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. And I suppose it's this thing of Paul is saying this is a horrible word in a way, but if you've actually received anything from Christ of his compassion and comfort and tenderness, then have that love for other people. And I suppose it's this whole ethos of the mind of Christ. What does it look like? If we're not compassionate, if we're not tender, if we're not comforting, if we're not encouraging one another, then we're not living out, expressing the mind of Christ. And so much of my work has to do with people who actually struggle because their mind is discouraging, is accusing, is all the things that are the opposite of Christ, no self-compassion, these things. So this requires a radical transformation. But at this time, I suppose, when more and more people are going to be needed for caring, for an escalating world of need, then I think growing the mind of Christ in people, that would be one of the safest places to be, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Tim?
Interestingly, Susan, Philippians has been a book that has been on my mind a lot over the last few months. We've been studying it in church, both in Sunday mornings and home group. And I think just the context of Paul's imprisonment, his own lockdown there, and sort of just the transformation that Christ's story can bring and brought to Paul's circumstances, I think just resonated a lot with me. I think I love Paul's declaration in chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. I want to know Christ. Yes, to know the power of his resurrection and participation in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and so somehow attaining to the resurrection from the dead. And just that sense that as I struggle with issues, and as those in my home group talk about their own struggles, so we recognize that we're participating in Christ's suffering. That, you know, he doesn't just identify with our suffering, but he participates in it, and he feels it personally. You know, and he bears our griefs and our sorrows as well as our sins. So, you know, I've had my own experience of loss during the pandemic, and I think I've really known Jesus drawing near and reminding me that he's involved, I'm not alone. So that's been a blessing to me.
Well, I mean, thanks to each of you for what you've shared. This has been so rich just listening to this, and I found it helpful and insightful, and taking a few phrases away with me. Let's lift the masks and see this as part of our discipleship and developing safe spaces. And Susan, your phrase from earlier, let's be Barnabas people. I absolutely love that. So I don't sense this should be a final word on this really important issue, but hopefully it will spark maybe more reflection and discussion, and hopefully fresh practice in our own lives and congregations as well. So thanks again to Susan, Peter, and Tim, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. In the meantime, please keep sending stories of faith, hope, and love from your own congregation. And thanks to each of you for listening to These Three Remain. See you next time.